What's up, everyone? Thanks for joining us for another episode of the Gamecast. I'm one of your hosts, Kenny, and with me is Tess.
Hello, everybody, also known as I don't have the Rona test.
Awesome. Awesome. Those tests.
Actually know that though. It's not like I went and got a test or anything. It's just that I haven't
Oh.
gotten sick enough to really think that it's Rona.
Well, that's good too. Yeah. Plus, those tests are not the most what's the word? They feel like
Accurate?
they've. Well, no, they're accurate. I mean, granted, you have to wait a couple of days, like, or actually, you
Yeah.
have to wait 10 days, I think, to get the results back. But I mean, they're not. It's not comfortable. Like, they have to swab like the inside of your brain or something to kind of check, and that's not. Let's just say I'm not trying to get the test done unless I have to.
Yeah, I know.
So
I mean,
I totally understand that. If at the very least, I'll just stay away from people for the 14-day, time period or whatever.
right. I'm like, what if it's been more than 14 days that I've just been feeling crappy?
Then you oddly enough might be okay. What's funny to me is when we get those tests done. Or maybe this isn't funny. It depends on your sense of humor right now. But like when you get the, let's say you got the test done and let's say, you're on the 10th day. So like the 11th day, you get the test back. But on that 10th day, you went around people and got it. So when you get the test back, you're like, oh, I'm free. I'm good. There's no corona. And then you go out and mingle and you actually have it because you got it. You know what I mean? Because you have that time period. Like I'm not like I don't know if I should trust the test either. Like I depending on how people are moving out here.
That and that's the thing. I think like we discussed this right at the beginning, or I shouldn't say right in the beginning, but like, earlier on where we were talking about how either test everybody or just behave as if everybody has it, because it's like if it takes 7 days to get a result, what are you supposed to be doing? And then if your test is positive, again, what are you supposed to be doing? Like, I get that you're supposed to be quarantining, staying away from other humans so you don't spread it.
I mean,
We
is it
understand.
like a STD? Like you have to call everyone and be like, "Yo, I shook your hand for like 4.5 seconds, so you might
Yes.
want to go." I mean, at least that's what I heard people do. I don't know personally, but I'm just saying, like,
I mean,
if you bump into somebody and you're like, "Yo," like, just letting you know.
just letting you know, like a week ago at Giant, when I was behind you and I was like, oh my God, where did you get that cupcake? It looks so good.
You remember I
Oh my
sneezed in
God.
your eye that one time?
That
Yeah.
one time, and now I gotta make phone calls
It
and be
only takes
like,
one time.
that's true. But this is probably why you should give everybody's phone number.
Yes. Yes.
Right
Yeah.
about the napkins and tea paper.
I need to call you just in case.
Hey,
You never
can
know.
you get your number? Oh my God, that's so nice of you. Sure, yeah. Oh, it's not because I actually want to date you. It's just because I might have Rona and you might have it too. So we should keep in contact just in case we both test positive.
Exactly, 'cause like, I'm just letting you know I got tested and shit might get real next week.
It
So, yeah.
so looking forward to hearing back from you.
Well, you see,
Yeah, no, not okay. Not
so
okay.
horrible. Anyways, so
Yeah.
yeah, so we're gonna talk about today we're going to talk about mostly anime stuff, but before we do
Yeah.
that, just want to share a little bit about just random stuff, like what happened throughout the week and that sort of stuff. This week has been cool outside of the fact that I had a sinus infection yesterday, and
Awful.
I was telling Tess it felt like when Debo got hit in the face with the brick from Craig on Friday. It was kind of like that. And I was having a hard time breathe.
That's no
My
fair.
there was pressure, my eyes were hurting, my teeth were hurting.
That's the worst.
I thought it because I've had it before where and I thought like I had a toothache. That's how bad it was. So
Yeah.
and granted I know what it is now, but yeah, like it all that entire area of your face hurts really bad.
Yeah.
And so you have to kind of like keep blowing your nose and whatnot, because if not it gets worse. And so
Yeah, pressure.
yeah, the pressure gets worse. And so there was no work getting done that got done yesterday. It was at all. It was not happening. And if you're wondering why we weren't able to, since I'm bringing it up, not getting work done, if you're wondering why we didn't have an episode last week, it's because there was a lot of storms. You know, this is hurricane season. And with that being said, we had a bunch of storms over here that would make the power go out. And actually, it went out earlier today, too. You know, it's one of those things where, like, a lot of the strong winds and, you know, they rock stuff around and the power goes out. Granted, over here, it doesn't stay out for too long, but it would suck if we're recording, the power goes out, and we lose content or whatever the case may be. So we decided not to record. And then yesterday, I was like, I'm not doing anything. It's just not happening. But my face... in the midst of that, though, I was able to catch up on a little bit of anime. I was able to play some video games and without having to write for them, which was cool. And so I was able to beat Final Fantasy VII, the remake, on PlayStation. I had been playing it before then, but I finally got to finish it. And it was interesting. They tweet the story a bit here and there, and it's mad confusing at the end. I did enjoy most of it, though. So kudos to Square. Please don't Kingdom Hearts this. I like, just, you can tell a straight story sometimes. It's okay. Yeah. Like, I get it. You want to emulate anime and, you know, the Final Fantasy-ness of your tales, but we don't have to do that. We don't have to do that. We don't have to Spirits Within this or Advent Children this. We could just have a straight story that makes sense. I'm not saying you have to walk by hand through each story beat and chapter, but random for random's sake isn't cool. I'll just put that out there. So, and granted, I'm kind of judging it a little early because this is one part. Like, they split the game into three parts. And so this 30-hour game that I just finished was just one part.
That's not okay. 30 hours, one part. Like, what?
Yeah, it's long. And granted, I understand, like, a lot of times RPGs are that way. But when it's one part of like a three-part thing, that's really one game. Yeah, it feels long, or is long, I should say. So there's that. I also, got to catch up on some anime. I saw season three, but Netflix has it as four of, The Seven Deadly Sins. Awesome season, except for the ending. I'm not going to spoil it, but It felt like season 4 and 5 or 3 and 4, depending on where you are, that they just cut it in half and was like, we'll get you the rest next year. Because it ends in a weird cliffhanger that doesn't, it feels like it's not done. Like, usually when a cliffhanger is like, okay, this part of the story is done, but we left a little bit here so you can question things. You can kind of, you know, look forward to the next season. It was like, no, we're just going to stop abruptly here. And it's like, wait, that's the last episode? Because you know how, if you're watching something on Netflix, how, like, you go, you're like, say you didn't check the episodes, right? And you're just watching it, and you're waiting for that little icon to pop up that says, you know, go to the next episode, and it doesn't. You're like, wait, no. This can't be the last episode.
No. You're like, wait, I missed something. Wait, no.
You can't do this. You can't do this to us in Corona.
It's not fair. Our emotions. Our emotions.
Yes, Coco season is not fair. And then the most interesting thing that happened recently, excuse me, as of today, Thursday, so Friday for you people, is Epic Games and Apple are fighting. And it's interesting because of what Epic is trying to do and what that means for what that means for monetization on the iOS platform. So for the people who don't know, and I'm not the best at explaining this, so if I get this wrong, forgive me, but you know, Epic makes Fortnite. Fortnite's like the biggest game right now. And typically, when a game is on iOS or Apple, in order to do like a in-game purchase, like you want to buy something for that game within the game, Apple gets a 30% cut. And that's something that's like across the board wherever you are. Like if you're buying on PlayStation, on Microsoft, on whatever, there's a 30% cut. However, those other platforms allow you to purchase from a third party. So for instance, let's say Netflix, right? You can get a Netflix account and log into their, on a web page and sign up for your subscription there. But then you can download the app and log in via your Xbox or your Android phone or Apple. And Apple, they don't get a cut from that particular subscription. I know they actually pay to have the app on the phone or whatever, but they don't get a cut per subscription. However, if you do it through the app on the phone itself, then there's a cut. So they give you that option. The thing is, Apple hasn't done that with gaming. Their stance is that, we need to make sure that your patching and the things that you put into your game actually work so that if people go and buy something, they don't destroy their phones or whatever. Everything has to be approved, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. And we should get a cut. Fairly so, I think. However, the amount of the that you should get is what's being debated. The thing is, Epic didn't just come up and be like, you know what? We don't think you should be getting 30%. So what they did was instead of like coming to Apple and being like, yo, let's work this out, they implemented a feature that allows you to pay directly to Epic, circumventing Apple. And so there'll be two options when you're on the phone. It'll say, do you want to pay through Apple? And it shows you a higher price. And they're like, do you want to pay through us? And it's a lower price. They lowered it by a certain percentage because if Apple doesn't take a cut, they can actually charge you. They don't have to charge you as much to make the same amount. And so Apple was like, hey, that you're circumventing our rules. You can't do that. And Apple has a valid concern in the sense that you're implementing something that we haven't tested. We don't know if the people who like if they send the money, are they actually going to Epic? You know what I mean? Like they can't buffer it. And so they remove the game from iOS. Now, that's a huge move. And I think it was a hasty move, even though Apple has a valid statement or a valid reason for doing so. Because outside of that, Apple also curates the games. They also make sure that they're working right, that they work on all of their devices, all this other stuff. They do a decent amount of work, and so they should get paid for it. The problem with doing that is that they don't do that for everybody. Like I was just saying, for Netflix, you can go on Netflix's site and sign up and then log in and not have a cut. They don't take a cut from that. And so the price that you pay on Netflix's website will be the same even if you're using it on your iPhone, your iOS phone or whatever. And so the debate comes in, or where Epic, I think, has Apple is the fact that they're arguing that it's oh God, anti-competitive, or in the sense
Antitrust.
that, yeah, in the sense that they can't, they're not allowing rival, or not rivals, but other companies to compete monetarily, and that's actually not a that's not allowed.
Yeah, that's a monopoly.
Exactly, and on Apple stance, I feel like Apple makes sense because it's their ecosystem. If you bring in something that corrupts their ecosystem, they're screwed. On the flip side, though, you have to hold everybody to accountable if you're going to have that ecosystem, in the sense that they're not holding Netflix and a couple other people to that same rule that they're holding Fortnite, which causes a problem. And so now Fortnite is suing. The interesting thing about this, though, is that one, they did it right when a lot of the tech giants are being brought in to talk about their reach. We have the head of Facebook, or the creator of Facebook, is being, he's being grilled about the idea of censoring people or freedom of speech when it comes to politicians, and how they could just post something on Facebook and it'd be wrong, like completely factually wrong, and Facebook won't do anything, which is trash. So they're being called out. So a lot of tech giants are being pulled into these different things. So this is a perfect time to kind of like hit Apple, but then at the same time, they had everything in play. Like as soon as Apple pulled the game, they had a "We're gonna sue Apple." They had a lawsuit ready. They had a whole video that they put out in game that aped the 1984 Orson Welles. Like it was nuts. Like they had this ready. They had this ready. Right. And so people feel away because obviously there's the whole idea of like these two giant companies are fighting, and we're the people who are kind of bystanding, who don't have a lot of money, so F all of them. I get that, I do. At the same time, I look at Epic's history, and even though they do some crappy stuff too when it comes to like crunch involving Fortnite, ironically so, when they were doing their Epic Games Store, Steam is the big competitor there on PC in terms of buying video games. Epic was like, we're just going to take 10%, whereas Steam still takes 30. And when they go to release, like, because they make the Unreal Engine, so people can develop games using their engine, they take a smaller cut. And they've worked in different programs that allow smaller developers to be able to pay them back at a certain stopping point. So, like, for instance, if they, at a certain point, they'll pay 10% of everything they make, and then after that, they only get have to pay anything until they hit like a million or something like that, and then they have to start paying again. So it kind of gives them a buffer. There's a lot of things that Epic has been doing to kind of help people who can't fight these type of fights, right? And so when we look at this from on from another standpoint, if Epic is like, because Epic doesn't need the money, they're partially owned by Tencent, which is like one of the biggest companies in I believe Japan. Correct me if I'm wrong.
I need a piece of that money.
It's huge. It's like, I think trillions. I could be wrong. At the very least, a bunch of billions. And they don't need the money. However, when they do this and they come up to fight with Apple, if they win and Apple buckles, or at the very least, if Apple concedes and says, like, you know, we'll just take 20% instead of 30, that's a win for all developers on iOS. So it's like, on one hand, you're like, you know what, Epic, you're not slick. You know, this will, if you win, give you a lot of money. On the other hand, it's also like, well, you are also helping other people and you can do that. Do I think Epic's stance is 100% morally sound? Like, they're just doing this based on morals? Probably not, because they're a company. And yeah. The consensus is, we don't trust you until you give us a reason to. So there's that. At the same time, it looks like that's what they're fighting for. And they have a track record that kind of is pushing that narrative. So interesting. I can't really side with anyone. I mean, granted, I have no dogs in this show, but I think it's really interesting what's happening. Because that could set a precedent, not just for Apple, but a lot of people, because Google does it too. Google takes their, because that's the industry standard now. And it was one of those things where, like, one person agreed to do it. Like, Apple, like, started, like, they weren't the first people, but they were the first people on this scale when it comes to, like, movies and stuff like that. And so it was kind of like, when Google's like, we're going to bring out our version, we're going to take 30% too, because you're agreeing with Apple to do so, as opposed to undercutting, which I thought would have been smarter. Whatever.
Yeah, totally.
But, you know, they do it too. So it's like, now it's an industry standard, but that doesn't necessarily mean that it's right. And so I'm waiting to see how this turns out. I'm not the smartest person when it comes to this type of thing. So if I got anything wrong, or you have a reason to be like, you know, can he shut up? Then by all means, let me know. But as of right now, this is what I see. And it looks rather interesting. To me.
Wow, that's a lot. I didn't even know that was going on.
It happened quick. It was like, this is a slow news day. Oh, what is going on with Apple and Epic? And that's what, where it comes into, like, Epic knew what they were doing, because it happened rapidly. Like, they announced the change, they switched it up in the iOS store. Apple took the game off. Epic came back with a response and then sued, and then had this, you know, the 1984 video, which is bad, by the way. It's bad. It's not we can't compare. Like, that's not a good thing. But if you look at it, it's the same thing that Apple did years ago when they were getting ready to introduce their computers, in terms of, you know, Windows and whatnot having a monopoly. Like, they did the same thing. It's the same video. It's just they're done in you know, Fortnite characters and whatnot. So Epic was ready. Like, yeah, like I was saying, Epic was ready. So in terms of, like, you know, a company doing something that might be deemed shady, you know, I can understand people being like, you know, Epic, what are you doing? But interesting stuff.
I just want some of the money.
Yes.
I might be able to sit here and fight and be, you know, conglomerates and behemoths and all this stuff. Can I just get $100?
Fam.
Can I get a little bit on my rent? Can I get a little bit on my credit card bills that I can't pay? Because, you know, the Rona took all the jobs.
Yeah. I mean, you know what? It would be dope if they were doing... You know how Spotify has a thing where, like, they have people who are influencers or celebrities who they'll curate music and have, like, a playlist, and they'll get paid for that because it's, like, influencing people to check out the playlist? They should do that for content, like anime. Like, I could curate some
we
anime.
We totally could, and we should.
Yes. We could make recommendations, especially based on your level of fandom, right? If you're new,
right.
Here's some anime you should check out. You know, if you're into the shonen stuff, we got some bangers for you. Or if you're not really into that, you're into the more like one and done, like not huge seasons, but like a one and done type of thing. You know, Studio Ghibli stuff. Like we got you there too. Like we could rack up. We could.
Okay, let's do this. Let's go ahead and infiltrate. Come on. Well, I mean, we're already doing it, but we do it in these long podcasts, and then we can bust out a 5-minute video of us running down a list.
Yeah.
On top 5 animes to watch if you're a, or you might be a, if these are your top 5 animes.
Exactly. Exactly.
Content to come, people.
Yes. I look, we're gonna talk off air. But beyond that, we do want to talk about anime, and so this is a nice segue into the animedom. And one of the shows I've been watching, or at least I started watching based on your recommendation a few weeks ago, was Japan Sinks. And I want to talk about the first episode. We're going to spoil the first episode, but you know, we're not going to spoil the rest of it because we actually want you to check it out. The first episode, I felt like, kind of sets the tone. So if it's not something you want to watch, you'll know by this first episode. I think it's pretty cool. First of all, let's talk about the artwork, you know, the animation itself. It's up there. It's quality, and not to say that shonen anime isn't, but there's a distinct look that reminds me of something that's more finite. Usually, you get this high end anime art when it's something that isn't going to be serialized. It isn't going to be. You know what I mean? Like we said, Studio Ghibli type stuff. Or it's going to be a short film, maybe a, what do they call it? I can't remember the name, but like, you know, like a short video. It's not something that's going to be a series. And so right off the bat, it's like, this is really great animation. The level of detail in the environment alone is crazy.
It is. It is very, very, I thought it was very interesting because, like, you know, we've watched stuff that has all kinds of different style of animation. We've seen stuff that is, you know, the old style animation. We've seen the new shonen stuff. We've seen the stuff that's like basically the cartoon shading over CGI.
Right.
We've watched something as interesting as Gankutsuo, which is still one of my favorite things that Gonzo ever produced.
Right.
I mean, like, that was out of control. But this is just like, whoa. Like, it's different. It's just different. It's very, I don't know how to explain it, but you know it's modern. You know it just came out. So, and then the, like, just the movements of the characters and the certain details that they did, but then the way they made it look. So you know it's more film style instead of, like, serialization. And then, and mind you, it is serialized, so it does... the quality does change. You know how every episode typically has like a different director or artist,
right?
Like in a lot of the serializations, like Inuyasha is a good example of that. But yeah, that first episode, I was very, very intrigued by the artwork, and I love seeing stuff in different styles. Like when I see stuff that reminds me of stuff that like Satoshi Kon did, I get very happy. So I was happy. I appreciated the first episode's animation style. It piqued my interest even more than just the content. Yeah.
Yeah, and it's because it reminds me a little bit of the older style anime where you can still see the pen strokes, you can still see the pencil lines in certain scenes, and then you can also there's imperfections there that is one of those things where I personally like. A lot of older like Disney films do it, but they're a little bit more heavy-handed. Like for instance, if you've seen Aristocrats or something along that line when that came out, you can see like hard pencil strokes that are that came through when they were doing the finishing, and it looks great. Like I think it for me as an illustrator, it reminds me that this isn't like a machine that cranked this out. Like people actually hand drew these characters and whatnot, and you get that vibe here. Even though it's cleaned up a lot, there's places where it's they've I don't know if it's hand painted or not, but like they're smoothed out in certain areas where you kind of notice it and you don't. And it does really well, and that's and it's actually in contrast to the backgrounds because the backgrounds are, even though they're anime and even though it's a cartoon, they're almost photorealistic in certain scenes. There was one scene where the one of the main character, because she runs track, or she's one of the main characters, is running down the street, and it looks like a real road. Like it looks like someone superimposed her onto a photograph. And I was like, this is nuts. Like this is really, really good. And so I'm a huge fan of the art. I'm also a fan of the music. And I know we haven't gotten to the nitty-gritty. We're gonna get there. But these are just things that I noticed.
This
Right, because these are things I noticed first
is
because I
what
kind of already knew what the content was a little bit. I didn't know what was gonna happen, but because we talked about it, I kind of knew the content. So these were the things I was looking at first. So like music, the soundtrack does this thing where a somber song for a not so somber moment. And it there's a juxtaposition of feeling and emotion there where you have something terrible happen and you have this somber music on top of it to where it's like, okay, this is the moment where someone is kind of moving through a negative like a bad scene, but in a way that's reflective. But the thing is, this isn't one of those times because the person is running through, they're trying to find someone, all this, there's chaos, things blowing up and whatnot, but there's still this somber music, and it kind of pulls you in two different directions at once because there's a heightened anxiety with, oh crap, is her family okay? And then there's the calming music where it's like, should I accept that they're not okay, or should I accept that? It's a weird way of conveying the what's happening in the scene. At the same time, it's really freaking cool.
And I appreciate it because I think what they were trying to do, this is why sometimes you really got to appreciate these directors, because it's like they know the product. They know what they want to give you, and they know what they want you to feel, and they give it to you. I think they wanted us to be just as confused as the people involved in the earthquake. I think they wanted us to feel multiple emotions, because how would you feel if you experienced an earthquake and you were running away from, danger or whatnot? You are elated that you escaped the horridness of what you just witnessed, and then you are also feeling like, wait a minute, is my family okay? Is anybody I know okay? Like, can you imagine that feeling of leaving behind a bunch of dead people that you watched die, or dying, they were still alive, and then moseying on out, and then like running for your life, and then also wishing inside, you're like, I wish I had just died with them. That's such a terrible thing. Like, I ran away, and then also, my family might still be alive. I'm almost there.
It's that, yeah. I didn't even think of that. As an aside, because that makes me think of one of my I really like a horror film. It's more recent, like a few years ago. It Follows. It does the same thing where I don't want to spoil the film, but what it does is it changes from scene to scene. It changes the weather and it changes the excuse me. It changes the weather and the outlook of the cast to the point where you're confused on what season it is. Like for instance, there's a opening shot where the character is in a swimming pool. It's like, oh, okay, summertime. At the very least, it's hot out. But then at the next scene, they're getting ready to go to the movies or whatever. They have on big like puffy jackets, kind of like if you were like in New York during the winter time, like maybe not the winter, but like right before, like fall or whatever. She's like, okay, maybe it's fall, and she just wanted to be. But then another scene, they're in shorts, and you're like, what the wait, what? But it's like it's done subtly, and the reason is to put you off balance, is to make you feel like something is wrong, even though you can't put your finger on it. It's a subconscious thing. And so going back to this particular show, I feel like that now that you bring that up, that's exactly the way it feels. Like you don't know how to feel because of what you're seeing, and what you're hearing is different. And so you're almost putting yourself in the shoes of the character. Granted, not, only to an extent, because you didn't see something as horrific as she, you're not going through it, obviously. But as someone who's watching, you kind of get the same feelings.
And for backstory, for people who aren't really following, this Japan Sings 2020 is the anime adaptation. Thank you, Netflix, for bringing this to us. But it is the anime adaptation of a novel actually called Japan Sings that was written and published in like 1973.
Oh,
And
wow.
I didn't even know about that book, the book, until after watching, like honestly, until like 5 minutes ago. But like, no. So yeah, it is an adaptation, and which so it makes me want to go, read the book now. But this is about what would happen if Japan, I'm not going to say the island, the islands of Japan. Japan is consists of like 2,000 islands. Okay, we know about the main islands, the big ones. We know of Hokkaido and Honshu and whatnot. We know that, but it's a lot of islands, volcanic islands. And what would happen if there was an earthquake that was so strong that it would cause the island to actually sink? And so this is something that is possible. Like, I don't want to call it probable, but it's just something that is possible if enough impact from a very, very high magnitude earthquake were to happen somewhere in Japan that basically triggered another earthquake because it was so strong. Like, what if there were multiple earthquakes that just kept happening over and over and over again? Like, you think it's just like, oh yeah, it's just going to be one earthquake and then like several aftershocks, like the earthquake that happened several years ago, which was extremely devastating. And if you guys remember years ago when that earthquake did hit, it made people really scared that Mount Fuji was going to erupt, because Mount Fuji has not erupted in Lord knows how long. And so people are like, well, if Fuji goes, then, well, screw it. The land of the rising sun is no more. And that's basically what this is about. So you have to kind of, you put yourself in the shoes, or you're a fly on the wall watching what happens to these people when this earthquake hits. It's not as if they know that there's going to be multiple earthquakes. They have no idea. You have no idea. I just told you. But it's just the idea that, hey, an earthquake hits, and in that first episode, an earthquake hits while people are living their regular lives. So since you watched it more recently, Kitty, I'll let you explain what you saw, because I watched it a couple weeks ago and my mind's foggy now.
Yeah, so that it was, the way it starts is like it's a kind of a mild earthquake, and what happens is it's kind of like a cascading thing where it's like you have the earthquake and there's like aftershocks, and what happens is, so during that time, nothing really is destroyed for the most part because everything is happening under the surface, to an extent where they don't recognize how damaging it is because it's not affecting the surface just yet. So like think of it, if you think about an earthquake that happens in the like Pacific or whatever, where like it's one of those things where you would get a tsunami warning, but you might not, the land that's nearby might not feel it even though it's a big deal. It's similar to that. And so what happens is an earthquake happens and people are like, oh, it's just, it wasn't a big deal, it wasn't, we're gonna get the aftershocks in a little bit, and their phones start going off. It's like a warning message starts going off, and they're thinking like I said, it's gonna be an aftershock. So the phone is like, hey, just letting you know, But what they don't realize is that it's not an actual earthquake that's coming this time, or like an aftershock. It's the actual island starting to sink. And what it does is kind of like, have you ever seen like a movie or a show where like someone's in an elevator and then it dramatically just drops and they all like kind of float up? Well, in this sense, they do that, but like the buildings don't move. So the people are like flying and hitting the ceiling and all this other stuff because the ground like literally goes down, however, super quick. And when they come back down, like everything is coming back down on top of them. So, buildings and parts of buildings and cars and whatever, like the road is all jacked up and it's bananas. And
And
so
I want to interject because one of the things that is important to understand, especially, and I feel like not just Japanese culture, but the cultures of everyone who lives in the Ring of Fire. If you are stationed somewhere in the Ring of Fire, earthquakes are common to you. And like I know, so one of my coworkers lived in Alaska. She said they have earthquake every day. And we were at work. We would do phone interviews. It's not phone interviews, sorry. We used to have a weekly meeting every like Tuesday or something. And so she would phone in from Alaska. It'd be like, 2 in the morning or whatever. It doesn't matter. And one time we were doing our thing, and then she just disappeared. We saw her, but we didn't think much of it. She's at home in her home office, so I'm not going to think much of it. She got under her desk and just stayed there for like, I don't know, the next 10 minutes. And then she came back. And we didn't, like, nobody really caught on in the meeting. We didn't say anything, but like, we actually talked about it the following week or so because, like, my boss brought it up and said, "Hey, you had an earthquake last week, didn't you?" And she was like, "Yeah." And then he's like, "Yeah, that's why you got under the desk." And I was like, "Wait, what?" And she's like, "Yeah, they happen all the time. That one was just worse than normal." She's like, "We get them, like," she's like, "there's small earthquakes almost every day." And so think about living in Japan, where earthquakes are a little bit more common, being in the Ring of Fire. And these are people who have survived the major earthquake that just happened in, what was it, 2012 or something?
Right.
So it was a, remember that first earthquake is a small earthquake. They said it was like, oh, remember the words they said? They're like, oh, that was nothing. That was a weakling. That was a 4.0. We deal with
Right.
that. Whereas here in Virginia, when we had that 4.0 or 4.5 or whatever, everybody was screaming, like people were crying. There was two people who got taken out of my office building in a stretcher. One person in a stretcher, the other person was like had oxygen. They were like, ah, felt like they were falling down in church.
Oh God. I mean,
Because
it's
we're not used to that here.
ex
We're not used to
yeah, we're not used to that. And it's also we're also our infrastructure isn't built for that. We have a lot
that.
of
Exactly.
brick homes that it doesn't take much to kind of crack them, and so yeah, I can understand people, especially if you lived here your entire life and never felt an earthquake, you would probably freak out a little bit. But yeah, continue.
But yeah, so and so they're just sitting there like, oh, nothing. Oh, it's a weakling, whatever. And the thing that gets me is that the main, basically main character is at a track meet with her classmates, and not track meet, sorry, track practice. And they all felt it, and they're outside already. And then the coach is like, "Okay, guys, you can go home." And the reason why I bring attention to this is I watched this episode and I was screaming. I'm screaming at the television because it's setting you up for it's setting them up for failure. It's
Right.
setting them up for the drama to follow because I'm sitting here like, no. The way we handle earthquake on this side, on the East Coast, is that if you have earthquake over here, you don't move. You don't go anywhere. You wait. You don't get up and say, "Class dismissed." You're like, "Okay, wait 30 minutes to an hour," and like stay in the same place because you need to know if the aftershock is going to be worse, if it was a prequel to something. You know what I mean? Like
Right.
that's what I always learned, like here on this side of the globe.
Right.
But
Preferably outside, away from buildings and trees.
yes. And they were literally safe. They were on the field, sitting down, talking about their track performance. And then she's like, "Oh yeah, earthquake." She's like, "Okay, guys, go home, head to the locker rooms." That was the death of the entire track team, save,
Yeah. Save the main character. And just to note that yeah, this next portion is what will probably make you say whether or not I want to watch this or not.
Exactly.
It's way more So they warn you before watching, like at the top, it'll, you know, Netflix does the little the ratings or whatever. It'll warn you that there's some things that are coming up that are, you know, you might not want to watch. And so in terms of violent, the episode, or rather the earthquake, that in itself being an episode of something tragic happening, is very much that. People are thrown, like I said, which way, every which way. What the main character's little brother actually gets hit in the face with a chair, and blood goes everywhere. Now, mind you, we were just talking about how this is animated really well. Well, some of these, you know, painful moments look real. But it's not one of those things where it's trying to, at least from what I've seen so far, I haven't watched the whole thing yet, but it's not one of those things where they're trying to be as gory as possible. They're not trying to promote any type of violent thing, but this, if this were to happen in real life, it would be violent. That's kind of what you know, if you're watching a disaster movie, it's not going to be like, oh, I got a paperclip, like, or you know, you know, a splinter, or you know, oh, I accidentally broke my arm. Like, no, there's you people are getting hurt and people are getting killed. So be mindful of that, depending on, you know, your current mind state. Being with this being, you know, Corona, for me, it does the opposite because it's not real, and it puts me away. Like, I'm in a foreign land. I'm not, you know, in the US, and I'm dealing with things that I typically wouldn't deal with. So from my perspective, it's like, oh man, how would I survive in this if this were to happen, and I'm in her position, you know what I'm saying? And so it puts me away from, there's escapism there. But that might not jive with everyone if your escapism can't, if something that could be potentially traumatic, if that doesn't work with in terms of escapism for you, then definitely pass. The same thing I was saying when we did our Saturday night streams and we played World War Z with zombies everywhere. That helps me escape. But if that doesn't help you, if it's a reflection of the current time, don't watch it. For me, I wouldn't watch the pandemic documentaries. I don't want to watch those. So I have to do something that's far away, if that makes sense. Going back to the show though, yeah, it's rough. I just wanted to put that out there. But 'cause you're like, Kenny, why would you know, recommend this to me? So yeah, it's a little rough, but I think that they do a good job of, you know, you start to root for these characters. You start to understand the family dynamic. You start to understand what makes them interesting to kind of root for, where they are. Because, you know, the girl, she leaves, you know, she has a friend that is hurt. And for me, I was like, would you know, help your friend? I don't know if they were friends. I don't know. I can't remember if that was the one that was like on her, because they were going to do relay races.
Relay
And
race,
so, you know, they had the whole track team, but then she had a particular squad that she was with. I don't know if that was that character or not. I have to go check. But I was like, help your friend. On the flip side, I was also like, this person's young and they're afraid and this has never happened before. And, you know, she's hurt and she just wants to get away before the building comes down. So I can understand. And then she feels bad about it. She feels bad because there's a moment where her dad is talking about how he's like, crap, I left my, you know, I ran out so fast that I left my cell phone, and she still has her cell phone. And then that's when she kind of breaks down because she's like, you know, I was there, I could have got help, but I didn't because I was concerned about where you guys were and I was afraid. And so I made sure to grab my cell phone because I knew I would need it. And for her, it was like a moment of selfishness, because she was able to make it and then had the time. You know, the idea is that you had the time to grab your cell phone and make a phone call. You had the time to help them. And she has to really deal with that. And so how her parents kind of help her through that moment and how she has to kind of reconcile that with the rest of whatever's going on. Because we see that she kind of makes a point to do that later on in the next episode. I'm not going to get into that, but she goes out her way to help people, as kind of you know, like kind of balancing the scales, if you will. So it's interesting to kind of root for her and kind of go through this journey with them, all while things are happening that kind of reflect today's craziness in terms of the media.
Because they have there's multiple avenues or there's multiple points in which the show tries to touch on. it obviously mainly natural disaster, okay? Like, dude, and how you cope, like how you make it. It's not
right.
There is this idea that, hey, there's this the macrocosm or whatever is this the background. The backdrop is the island is sinking. The backdrop is there are earthquakes every 5 seconds. The backdrop is buildings, roads, everything is collapsing, going up, going down, and you just need to run. And you just need to find out how to do anything. That's like, that's one. The next thing is like, how do you get along with other people who are going through the same thing that you are and that are able-bodied? Because in a situation like this, it's like, okay, people who are not able-bodied, either you can carry those people like physically, or you leave them be and you keep it moving and you protect what assets you have. Your assets may just be your loved ones.
Right.
And you keep it moving. And then thirdly, it's navigation, because it's one thing to be like, okay, well, I know this part of town. And so I know where I'm going, or we can go this direction. The other way, the other purpose of navigation or the other method is by the news, the media. And so they have to rely on what they have. Like, all of Japan doesn't fall apart at one point. The earthquake starts in one place, and then next thing you know, there's another one, and then there's another one, and then there's another one. And so the news is still on, like power is still on in certain places. There's water in places, and you end up having this kind of like running theme that ends up running through the whole show, which is only like 8 episodes, 8 or 10. I think it's 8. Yeah. And you know, you've got people with cell phones because certain cell towers are still working, and they're like, hey, I have a friend in this country who they are now getting information that we're having problems over, that we're having earthquakes, and they're saying that we need to go this way, or there's a satellite up here that's saying X amount of information. Like, there's a satellite over Japan right now that is it's European owned, you know, it's from NASA, and they have information on what's going on that we don't have on the ground, because we just don't have it. We don't have people on the ground who are out there with cameras because they're scared as hell or they're running.
Right.
So it's just that it's you kind of like, you don't get any information ahead of them. This isn't one of those things where we're like omnipotent or omniscient and we're like screaming, saying, oh, hey, the music is a certain way, don't go that way. This is like us kind of walking right along with them, going through what they're going through and having to make the split decision. If you were walking with a group and you just had an earthquake and there's 20 of you and 5 of you decided to go say, hey, let's go this way. But there's 5 other people who are like, no, let's go this way. There's a store. I have supplies here. It's just 5 miles. We can all walk 5 miles, right? Let's go this way because I have a store. It has water. I have, you know, we can pick up supplies and then keep moving. And then you've got 5 other people who are like, nah, man, I just texted my friend in Australia and they said that that's not a good idea. Like, how would you as a human being, an adult or whatever, make those decisions? And, you know, if you watch Walking Dead, you might know something, you know?
There's also the fact that it's they hit on the fact that there's a little bit of political-ness with it.
Yeah.
In the sense that... Yeah. One of the guys is like, you know, I don't want to listen to whoever because they might not like Japan. And so they're saying that, you know, these islands are sinking. We don't know that to be true. And they might be directing us all over the place. It's hard to say because, you know, this media website is saying this type of thing. This one is saying this. And none of them have a full picture of what's happening, but they're posting as fast as possible. And so some people are just skeptical. You know, and then there's the dichotomy between older people and younger people, where, like you said, you know, the kid got a text from his friend saying that, hey, we saw a whole island sink, like crazy. But then another one's like the older people, like, oh, that's made up on YouTube, and it's, you know, it's getting all these hits, and who is that guy? They're not even verified, and all this other stuff. And to an extent, they have a point. But then on the flip side, it's like, well, who are you going to believe? Your country is saying is everything is okay, because they don't want to – either they're being, you know, mum's the word, or they're like, everything is okay, we'll handle it. They're not –
and that's Japanese culture too.
Yeah,
that's their culture.
You know what I mean? They're not – you know, it's one of those things. And granted, it's a little bit different where it's like – because, you know, in the real life earthquake, I want to say there was a point where they were like, hey, you know, we could use your aid, because a lot of countries did go and kind of help. But I think what they're trying to say in this is that it was so devastating that maybe it's, I don't want to say embarrassing, but like we need a lot of help. Or it could be one of those things where like their entire everything is so jacked up right now that they can't even get the word out that they need help. So there's different ways you can look at it. And so depending on your age, what group you're in, whether you're the teenagers, the people who are younger, who are more plugged into certain things, and then the older people, depends on which way you go. And so, you know, going left or right, it was like, I don't know. Like,
I don't know, man.
for me, I think from personally, I think I would have erred on the side of caution. So a bunch of people are saying that the islands are sinking and the water is rising at the very least, because someone makes the point to say that if it was a tsunami, that the waters would have receded. Because this is at this point, it's a whole day has passed, and so but the waters are rising, and they were like, well, it can't be the maybe the you know the dam broke or whatever, and it's like, well, it hasn't rained, like it wasn't a lot of water. If anything, it would the water would rise, but it wouldn't keep rising. And so it was like, okay, we don't know if these people are making things up, but if they're right and you go the wrong way, you could be trapped. The whole point that the reason they were moving in the first place was because the water had gotten up to, it was getting close to the hill that they were on. And it was like, all right, we're gonna have to walk through the water to get to however, you know, wherever we need to go. And you know, people are like, hey, places are sinking, get to high ground, or you know, go inland. And how, you know, the route is changes based on who you talk to. I would have been like, you know what, if it is sinking, if it's not sinking, I'm not really hurting myself too much, because it hasn't gotten to the point of Walking Dead yet, right, where people are fighting over bottles and things of that nature. It hasn't gotten there yet, so at the very least we'll be okay walking this way. But if it is sinking, you guys might not be okay. One thing I also want to point out is that they do make mention, and I don't know how far they go into this, they do make mention of how the water itself can impact people by way of infection. The main girl cuts her leg, and she walks into the water, and you know it, you know she has a reaction. And if you've ever been, I know, like we're, for instance, Virginia, we've had floods and things of that nature. They'll tell you, people will tell you not to eat or drink anything that has touched flood water because it's crazy filthy. But the same thing goes if you have an injury, like you need to clean that and keep it clean. And so not only are they dealing with the fact that the island, you know, the Japan is sinking, the fact that there was earthquakes and things are, you know, unstable, falling apart, and the human element where people might start fighting over things. There's also the fact that all of this is the water is now contaminating everything. They make mention of like, you know, I think a factory blew up too. So that's all that stuff is in the water. And then, you know, the bodies and all this other stuff. So it's like, it's the odds are stacked against them. And so it's interesting to see how this family makes it out for the most part. At least that's what's my thing. Going into it, like, I wonder how they get to whatever. Like, what's the end result of this calamity?
And that is something to look forward to for real, because just watching like the relationship, it's and you start to see who's really, really like I don't want to say like a necessity, but like you see the level of input that the individuals have. Like the younger brother is this gamer. He is a gamer. He is known in the gaming community, and that actually helps them. The fact that he knows people in Estonia and he can speak multiple languages, you know, where like the daughter, she only speaks Japanese, but her brother speaks English, and I believe he might speak French. Like he speaks Japanese, and then I think he because the mother is actually from Thailand. She's half Thai. I cannot remember where she's from, but something that we actually discussed a couple weeks ago about colorism in Japan, which is a real thing, because when we were talking about the girl who's the wrestler and she committed suicide, like she dealt with a lot of people, you know, being very mean to her because she's not full Japanese. Her mother is Japanese and her father is not, and honestly, I forgot where, I forgot what, you know, it, I forget, I just can't remember. I cannot remember what she said, what her mother had said. But so the mother on this show is also, you know, not actually Japanese. And so then they start running into those issues where people are very, very proud Japanese and don't want to, they're like, oh, well, we need to save Japanese people first. If you're an immigrant, we don't want to help you. And so that becomes a thing. And you start to see the roles that people are playing, because, you know, the son, who is like multicultural, has these connections, and right. he can act as kind of like this little satellite. And the dad is just really, he's just such a great dad. You know, he's like, oh, you guys need help digging something? Yeah, I can find that. Oh, wait, you needed help on creating like a beacon of light? Oh, I can wire that, because he's a construction worker. Yeah. And so everybody, you start seeing people playing their roles, and you're like, wow, if you are ever in some ish, you need to find these types of people.
Right.
Like, be like, as soon, I'm telling you, as soon as something goes down here and we still got cell service, I'm gonna find a Yellow Pages and call every construction worker I know. And I'm gonna be like, can you meet me here? I'm tagging along. I'll be your entertainment.
Yeah, like,
he's great. Can I come along?
Yeah, he's great. I like also the subtlety that they have in the different characters. Like with him, because the little boy will speak a different language. And at first I thought it was random why he would do it. And it was kind of like foreshadowing, because when he spoke to other mm-hmm. people, he would change the language up depending yes. on what was happening. Yeah. To kind of either calm someone down or to kind of be like, I'm a friend, or, you yeah. know, that sort of thing. Which is really cool. But then there's other things that they do that are more subtle. Like, for instance, when the kid got a text, or when the teen got a text from their grandmother, and it was an old text that happened before the yes. earthquake. And the dad, she was like something to the effect of like, you know, we baked you a, no, what did she say? We sent you, I think, like fruit or something. Like they were yeah. getting ready for her track meet. And the father, who was obviously bothered by it, was like, man, you know, I wish you would send meat sometimes. And he kind of like goes and bees by, you know, he goes by himself. And you yeah. realize he's not really, he doesn't care about the food. Like, you understand that he's actually worried. Yeah. But he also understands that he's standing in front of his wife and kids, and yeah. he doesn't want them to freak out. And so he kind of like, you know what, I'm upset because she doesn't send me food or what. You know, he kind of plays it off in that regard. Yeah. But it's not, you kind of like, oh, I see. Like, there was some nice subtle touches there.
Yeah.
In terms of storytelling. Yeah.
Very human reaction.
Right.
And I think that first episode really does give you almost everything that you kind of would like need in a blockbuster film, you know?
Yeah.
Like, and then of course, as you go along, because the story is longer, you know, it stretches. It's not, what was the movie, where the girl cut her leg in the snowstorm? That thing, and then all the dogs got like rabies or some nonsense.
Oh God! I don't know.
I forgot I don't know something. I don't remember, but, but it was the one with the Duke Prince of Persia, Jake Gyllenhaal. And I'm so mad that I remember that he was Prince of Persia. But yeah, him, and then that girl, she cut her leg. When there was water, because the thing flooded, and then she cut her leg, and then they all had to stay in that room with the fire.
I do remember that. I don't remember the name though.
Yeah. I forgot the name of that movie. It was dumb, but it also had like real, like it's very similar. The thing is, that movie is very similar, but it was a movie, so it was shorter. So what, maybe the maximum length it could have been was 3 hours. And I know it wasn't 3 hours, probably right. 2.5 to 2. And so in this is a series of like 8 episodes at, you know, 30 minutes a piece. So it's longer. Excuse me. And there are some things that are a little bit drawn out, or some things that end up being like more, or kind of just like, oh, you know, there's parts where I'm like, I want to smack the girl across the face, like, you know, but at the same time, I also have to remember she is a teenager. I don't even remember how old she really is. She could be 15. She could have just gotten high school. And so I just feel like they did such a good job on making these people very human and behave like in their age group, And then, of course, they, you know how these stories go, or there's always like these heroes, and there's always like somebody, like people who are just way too good to be on this earth.
Yeah.
And you're like, yeah, man, you're not as realistic because you're just too perfect of a human being to like do these things. Like, I'm going to do this for you guys. And you're like, yeah, no, we watched like 12 seasons of Walking Dead and no, nobody did that. So, you authors are taking a cheap shot at showing how great people can be. And I don't know if I believe that.
But, you know what? It would probably be easier to believe it if we weren't, you know,
dying of corona, seeing
the goofiness that's happening with that and the extent of how that could happen. Because someone was saying, like, I don't believe, like, I remember someone saying they don't believe that The Walking Dead or any apocalyptic film, how people just turn on each other. And I'm like, yo, there's a dude shot at police because he was told to wear a mask when going into a store. Like, yeah. I can believe that people will be upset if you're like, hey, you know, you can't have this bottle of water because we have to ration. Like, I can see people being upset and be like, you know what, because I'm such and such, I should have it. Or, you know, especially when we talk about, you know, colorism and things of that nature, I can see people being like, you know, save the white people first, save this people first. Like, I can see that. So, yeah, I can understand how a genuinely good person going way out of their way to help people that they don't know is hard to believe. I do think it happens.
It does, yeah.
You know, I mean, you know, your cousin makes a hand sanitizer for random people, so...
Yeah, he does, and he's a unicorn, such a weirdo.
Right.
Who the hell does that? He does. No, like, nobody does that. Who does that? Who goes and buys all the grain alcohol available, makes hand sanitizer, and hands them out to new mothers and pregnant people? Like...
Yeah, someone who's right with God. That's
and that's literally, that's it. Freaking unicorn, ladies. He's still single. Do you need me to call him? Like, yeah. So, yeah, some people really are just like angels and just walking among us. And like 12 of them decided to be in this one show. So, don't believe you. But still, it is worth the watch. And, you know, I have my own feelings, and again, not going to spoil it, but I have my feelings about the show. Overall, I liked it, and it still stuck with me. It's still in my head because there are things that have that happened in that show that I am just like, man, wow. And certain words that were said, certain lines that will never leave my head. And like we were talking about, like trigger warning, you know,
right.
If can't deal with something that's like post-apocalyptic in this time, don't watch it. Also, there are going to be parts in this show where you're like, hey, this is too close to home. Like, something like this has happened to me, or that's just too traumatic, or X, Y, and Z. Like, I get it. And, you know, I'm just warning you that this show is full of these things. It's a disaster show. So... So, prepare yourselves.
Right.
But overall, it's worth it.
Yeah. Well, that's what I want to, you know, preface with, that it might not be for everyone for whatever reason. And I haven't seen all of it, so I can't, like, pinpoint each and every single thing. But it does warn, when you click on it, it does warn about sex. It does warn about violence. It warns about language. It warns about gore. So those four things, you know, you can imagine, like, anything within the realm of triggering in those descriptors, be mindful of that. I am going to finish probably in the next day or two, and we could talk a little bit more holistically later on, to kind of give you a better, you know, idea of what it is. But, you know, just, I don't want you to go in there and, you know, something freaks you out, and then you're like, you know, Kenny told me to watch it. Like, no, we're saying proceed with caution. And on that note, I'm going to cautiously bring up the trailer that went up not too long ago. We were going to talk about this last week, but like I said, because of the storms, we didn't. And that's the new half demon show, Princess Half Demon. I can't say the first name.
Yasha Hime.
There you go. Princess Half Demon. And it's a sequel to a show that my co-host loves, and
Yeah.
she feels a way about it. So I'm gonna let
I
her
feel your
take it
way.
away.
All right, y'all. I feel a type of way, and I feel a type of way for a very specific reason that really maybe not many other people feel. I don't know because I haven't read the Reddit posts yet, but Inuyasha is very near and dear to my heart. I was watching that show like back in the day. I remember like in 2003 or 2002. I can't remember when it was on. Whenever it was released in America as the dub is actually when I started watching it, and then I poured all my effort and illegal money into buying the subs. So and nobody heard that part. Luckily, nobody watches it. Like, anyway, Inuyasha is very, like I said, very near and dear to me. I love it. Seishomaru is actually my husband. He's here right now. So I married the real Seishomaru.
That's creepy as hell.
Yeah, I know, isn't it? Anyway, so I love Seishomaru. He's one of my favorite characters. Probably more of the stuff that I made up about him than what's really about him, but that's okay. I'm a weirdo. And I had my own, like, if you when you watch your favorite something and it's ongoing, like I was reading the manga and like weekly while Inuyasha, the final act, wasn't even on TV yet. And I was reading the manga and everything weekly and just put a lot of effort and energy into it. And I was always trying to predict. So especially back then in the day, I was always predicting my favorite animes. Like I used to like read Nana and I was like, oh well, oh she's gonna get with Takumi. Oh, this, that, and the other. Like I was reading Naruto and I was like, you know what? As much as like Hinata loves Naruto, I think Naruto is gonna end up with Sakura anyway because, you know, because of what's it called, because what's his face and the you know the what are they called? The big people, the Hokage, you know, like what's his face? I forgot what's her face. And I was like, so Naruto has to come full circle and he has to be with Sakura because of that. And then, you know, it didn't happen. So anyway, I spent a lot of time making false predictions. But I did that with Inuyasha and Rumiko Takahashi, who I love, my new Takahashi sensei, I seriously revere her. And she completely what did like a total left turn on everything that I imagined. And I was like, what? Why would you do this to me? Why would you have Kagome go back in time? That means that she's gonna be dead. And you know what I mean? Like, I just felt sad knowing that she went back in time because, like, you know, her family had to say goodbye to her, and then it's like she doesn't exist in the future anymore. She doesn't exist in our present anymore. And I just thought that that was sad to be like her family and know that. And I'm like, I always had this idea that Inuyasha would come to the future and that would be like more interesting because then like Seishomaru, who's never gonna die unless somebody tries to kill him, would end up living in the future too. And you know, obviously. So I just had all these ideas. So that anyway, that's my backdrop. And Takahashi-sama did not listen to me. She went off and did her own thing, which is well within her rights, and she created it, but I still felt the type of way. So she ends the show. I have my feelings, especially when it comes to Rin and Seishomaru. I mentioned this a couple casts ago, because as much as I love Rin and Seishomaru's relationship, I don't ever want that to butt into some romantic relationship because I just don't think it's right. And I always thought that Rin was actually more suited to Kohaku. And I personally think that would be a great relationship. So it kind of like bothers me because if Rin and Seishomaru actually do end up having children, that just makes me angry. It does. And I don't think it's okay. So I feel a certain type of way and I'm just confused. I am confused. I think that I don't feel as though it was necessary for Seishomaru to end up falling in love with a human and having half human children. We know that he teased his brother his whole life for being a half demon. It doesn't, I don't think it's important for, say, Seishomaru to go through the same thing of falling in love with a human and having half human children. I just think that the year is 2020 and we're past that kind of we're past that kind of storytelling. That I feel like that kind of storytelling was great back in the 80s and 90s. Like it's like, oh, now you have to carry this curse or something because of your father and your oath. Like, I just feel like we're past that. And I feel like Seishomaru knows what he did. He knows the way he treated his brother was wrong all those years. He doesn't need to atone for that, or not even atone, but be like, okay, well, yeah, humans are cool now. Let me go fall in love with one and have some kids. it just to me doesn't it doesn't further anything. Like, it just kind of perpetuates a stupid stereotype. So, and that's me getting super hardcore into Takahashi dumb, you know? Like, I'm in the story, I'm invested, and I'm like, hey, my personal opinion, if I was on your board of editors, would just say this is not a good idea. But, and I think that Inuyasha and Kagome moving on with their half-demon, non-demon lives is perfect. They can have as many children as they want. But I just think that for character's sake, Rin was better suited to Kohaku. They really enjoyed each other's company as children. And I think that Seishomaru could actually, it would make more sense for Seishomaru to fall in love with a half-demon. He hated half-demons more than he hated humans. So that to me actually made more sense. And that could have been fine. Or he could have always had a betrothed demon wife that was chilling on his mom's cloud somewhere. I always felt that there were so many different avenues for, you know, Seishomaru to have a lifelong partner that he mates with and has children with, that obviously couldn't be me because Takahashi-sama didn't know me, and so she didn't put me in the story yet. So, moving along. From the fact that we saw this little preview, and I just want to say right now, and then I'm done talking, I don't know what the heck happened. I don't know what we just watched. I saw some half-demon girls, and one of them is in the future living with Kagome's family because she apparently got sucked through time accidentally. And then the other one, her twin sister, is still back in the past living with, you know, them.
Right.
And then there's another one that's younger that looks like it's wearing the robe of the fire rat. And so I'm thinking that that's Inuyasha's child. And I just don't know who's really who. So are the twins Seishomaru's kids? Because they do look more like Seishomaru in a way. But how would I know? Because one of them's got black hair, the other one's got white hair, or silver hair, actually. And so I don't know whose kids these are. And I'm kind of confused, and I'm not really eager to find out.
It was confusing looking at the trailer. Like,
yeah.
And granted, it's, you know, I'm not sure if it was a teaser. They did have like a little bit of a story talking about someone goes here or there, but they don't really tell you who they are. It's kind of like, you know, the person A goes here. It's like, okay, well, who's person A? You know?
Yeah.
And so that is kind of confusing, but I wanted to bring it up because I know kind of how you felt about it in terms of like them even doing a sequel series anyways, but then to find out like, oh, your guys are, you know, there's children involved and all this other stuff is like, you know, I don't know. I don't know. I don't know how I feel about it. So I wanted to look at the trailer and kind of see. And at the very least, I could say that the animation looks good. It reminds me of it. It doesn't seem dated in a sense.
Yeah.
Even though that's, you know, it's based off of an older series, it doesn't look dated. But then at the same time, it's not something that, it doesn't look like Naruto, for instance. It looks like an Inuyasha, you know, spinoff or whatever the case may be. So at the very least, they have the look. You know, they have a decent look.
Yeah.
As far as, you know, anything beyond that, though, I'm like, I don't know.
Yeah, and I don't want it to waste our time because, like, I love Inuyasha, and so I don't want my time to be wasted because if the way that I fully invested myself into Inuyasha, period, like, I would want to do the same thing here. So don't give me a bad story because then you're just going to ruin it for me. You're just going to ruin the series. It's almost like watching the second version of freaking Basilisk. Oh my god. Like, what was that? who authorized this? Because whoever authorized that needs to be coughed on right now. Like, that's not
just,
okay.
That's just rude.
That's definitely rude. But I'm like, that's just not okay. And it was a horrible series. And what, you let Tenzin come back at the end because he's raping people again? Like, if that's the only way you can tie a character to another character, it's like, oh my god, you try to rape me, you're Tenzin. No! Get out of here! The series was stupid. And it meant no sense. It made no sense. So, what I don't want is something where it's just like, oh, you're only linked to the main characters from the old show because you're their children. Are you doing anything interesting? Is the main goal in this series going to be as pulling as the other one. Because remember, Inuyasha was about really finding the shards of the Shikong jewel and making it whole again so that the bearer could make a wish. That was right. That's the only reason why we got 500 plus chapters of that manga. The only reason why we got 200 episodes. I don't even know if it made it 200. It was 135 episodes for the first one. I don't remember how many final act episodes, so it doesn't matter. The point is, we got all of that because of a stupid jewel that broke in the first place. And if what could be so enthralling that we would get a reboot? Like, okay, the Shikon jewel came back and split again. First of all, no, that would be dumb. That wouldn't be interesting. Like, this thing about the demon tree being the reason why one of the twins gets sent to the future anyway, is that's interesting. And like, you've at least given me the vessel to know why this is what's going on with the characters.
Right.
But what are they fighting? There's always going to be demons. Great. But by the time you get to our present day, you know, which should be 1995, to be honest, because I think that's when she started writing the story. Anyway, but when you get back to our present day, like, there's no demons unless they're demons in disguise, which I would love to investigate. I would love for that to be the new theme, the whole reason why, say, Shomaru's kids, Inuyasha's kids, anybody's half-demon kids are even necessary in the real world, like our world today, is because there really are demons around and they're just disguised and they need to root them out. Kind of like blood. But
yeah.
But otherwise, I don't know what the pool, which is also why I'm sure they had to go back to the past, because what could be the purpose?
I don't know. I mean, granted, we, like I said, this is all off of a trailer. And we don't 100% know what's going on, what's going down.
They should have just had a Seishomaru spinoff. That's all I asked. All I asked you, Rumiko, was to make a spinoff. It could have been one season. It could have been I don't care. It could have been 13 episodes or whatever. A Seishomaru spinoff. He had all of the content, the roundness of a main character, of a lead. He had all of it. And you could have made a complete drama, not a dramedy, you know, not a comedy, not anything, a dramatic, not like Berserk-esque, like I mentioned before. Like, it could have been a very dramatic show regarding him and why he is the way he is. Like, you need to talk about his father, you need to talk about how he was raised, you need to talk about what happened with his father and his mother, you need to talk about what made his father and mother, you know, what made him run off with Inuyasha's mom, you know, like things that designed Seishomaru into being the person who he is. Was he an assassin for hire at some point in time, you know, like what was he doing while he was obviously this whole time trying to prove himself to his dead dad? Because he was doing a lot. He was doing a hell of a lot. Like, oh, I'm going to get that sword, this, that, and the other. Dude, you've been running around for like 900 years. A, get over it. But B, I want to know what's fueling you at this point, because you never felt like you were good enough. Your father died in a point in time where you still felt like you had things to learn from him. And then that screwed you up for the next 250 years. So, like, I just feel like there's a lot of information there. She made a good character off of, like, little backstory. We got all of Naraku's backstory. We know exactly who Naraku is. That's why there's no Naraku spinoff. Why would there be? There's not enough info. We have all the info. But Seishomaru is one of those characters that we actually don't know that much about. So we could have gotten a whole series on him. Could have had all the girls that were pressed on him that he always walked right by. You know, because he was like, yeah, no, I'm not interested because I'm trying to kill people. No, I'm not interested. Remember, like his father said, don't you have something to protect? And he's like, no, I don't have anything to protect because I don't want to be weak. Like, he forced himself not to find love, not to care about things, accept power because he never wanted to be weak. Why was he so hell-bent on not being weak? He felt like his father was weak when his father fell in love with a human, even though his father was not being weak, he was being strong because he was like, I'm not really concerned about what anybody feels. I love this human and I'm going to be around her. Maybe it was a bad idea because, you know, she did get killed, but then he brought her back to life and then he got killed.
Spoilers.
So, you know. all this stuff happened in Seishomaru's life. It makes a perfect story. And I was telling this to a friend of mine years ago, like seriously, 10 years ago, more than that. And he was like, well, Rumiko decided to go another direction. She wanted to do other things. She's not interested in continuing on Inuyasha. Oh, bro, really? Oh, really? She's not. Right? And then we have this. So I just said, my thing is, I just always felt like Seishomaru was just the more interesting character. And I like deep, dark things. So if there was something that was very, like kind of darker and maybe bloodier, but not, like I'm saying, not berserk type gore, because that's really gory, but more like, you know, Kenshin blood. like blood must be spilt for the betterment of life. Or like 12 Kingdoms type blood. Like there was a lot of killing and going right on, but it was for purpose. And so I'm like, I feel like she could have done a dark story like Samurai X, kind of, you know, for Seishomaru to understand why he is the way he is, and then culminating in him either finding love, settling down, building the kingdom that he always said he was going to build, and, you know, like create this empire that he wanted to do and kind of be that king that his father never became. His father was a general. You know, and I think Seishomaru always looked for greaterness than that. And so I just felt like there was a better story there that could have happened. And that's not what I'm getting. I'm getting some other nonsense. And he had some babies with somebody that I'm not sure who it is. And I'm pissed off because he didn't consult me.
Wait, so you're jelly on the low. That's what that is.
Totally. Totally jelly. That is my man, okay? And I just want to meet Ken Narita in person. And like, well, I can't shake his hand, but maybe I can elbow bump him. Because I just think that he voices Seishomaru so well. He's just so good at it. Like some of the stuff that he would say, like some of his lines, I would be dead. I'd be like, damn, you're good at this.
He's like, well, that's why they pay me the big bucks. Yep.
Right. And I think he's like a freelancer too. I don't even know. He, you know, like you can watch multiple animes and you're like, okay, I know that person. You're like, this person's a freaking voice actor whore. They're in everything. Like everything. But this guy, Ken Narita, he's like, okay, he did this. He did like one of them Kenshin movies. He did like two other voices. And then he's like, yeah, I'm a freelancer. I'm chill. I only take, what's worth it to me. And you got Kape Yamaguchi, who does Inuyasha's voice, who is amazing. That guy is amazing.
Are they going to be in the spinoff?
They are in the spinoff. I'm hoping that they kept all the original voices because it would be stupid not to. They were so good. I personally feel like one of the reasons why the Inuyasha show like worked so well is because they did a really good job on casting. And so, yeah, they are going to be in, as far as I know. I mean, I don't know, man. Previews be lying, but Seishomaru's voice is insane. They say things. And so I'm just hoping that everybody, and I swear to God, though, if Naraku shows back up, if Naraku or the Shikon Jewel show back up, I'm turning it off.
Well, we'll have to wait and see. We'll have to wait and see. With that said, we're gonna go to close out. I'm not sure exactly when it's supposed to air, but I will definitely check it out when it does, and we will be talking about it. So just heads up, we will be talking about this show. But thanks for joining us for another episode of the Gamecast. Hopefully you enjoyed our deep dives into a couple of different shows. The one that we talked about the most this episode was Japan Sinks 2020. It is on Netflix right now. Yeah. No, we're not getting paid from Netflix. We should get paid from Netflix, but we're not, unfortunately. If you want to, set up a petition of sorts, I'm not mad at you.
Yeah. Change.org, anything.
Facts.
And yeah, we maybe should just set up like a Patreon or something.
I'm thinking about that. Those are some things we're looking into, different options. But at the very least, though, you can share, subscribe, hit the notification bell so you know when more content is going up. If you saw our Saturday night, or actually if you missed our Saturday night stream, we did 2 weeks in a row of Fall Guys. Hilarious game. Go check it out. It's basically Battle Royale with like these little jelly bean looking dudes. If you've seen the show Wipeout or like Netflix's The Floor is Lava or whatever, it's similar to that. So like I'm laughing so hard in one episode that I'm crying. That we had a great time. or one session. So definitely go check that out. All that's on YouTube. And I'll have like all the links and stuff in the description below. Follow us on our various social medias and whatnot. And exactly. And we'll see you next time. Next week.
Next week, guys. Thanks so much. Wear a mask. Don't be a dick. Wash your hands. Don't be a dick. Wear a mask. Thank you to all of our first responders and essential workers. You guys are the best. Stay inside. Social distance. We love you all. Bye-bye.